I'm going to speak about non-conformal field theories and the relation to supergravity. The talk is based on this paper with Grassina, Zonenstein and Yankelevich, and this couple of papers with Brandhuber, Zonenstein and Yankelevich. Let me start with the case which we are all familiar with, the D3 brain. The theory living on D3 brains is the N=4 theory, whose effective coupling constant is G-Yang-Mirskwo times N. On the supergravity side, we have a solution whose curvature is given here, and we see that if G-effective is much larger than 1, then the curvature is much smaller than 1 all over the place in string units, so we can trust the supergravity solution. In particular, we can trust the supergravity solution in the regime where the field theory regime, where we keep the field theory energy fixed, we take alpha prime to 0, and we end up at the substring regime. At this substring regime, we have the anti-de-Sitter cross S5 solution. There are several properties of this solution which makes the correspondence between the supergravity in the bulk and the field theory at the boundary possible. First of all, we have alpha prime in front of the metric, and this, as a result, the curvature goes like 1 over alpha prime, so alpha prime corrections are related to 1 over G effective expansion. From the field theory point of view, also string loops are related to 1 over n expansion, as we heard several times. Also, if we calculate the time it takes for a light signal to reach infinity from any point inside the anti-de-Sitter, it's finite, and on top of this, the centrifugal barrier is at infinity and it blows up there, so massive modes cannot propagate all the way to the boundary. We can study now the theory living on a DP brain, a collection of NDP brains where P is smaller than 3. On the field theory side, we have an effective coupling constant, which is a little bit more complicated now. We have G-Yang-Mirskwo times N times U to the power of P minus 3, where U is the energy scale in the field theory. For example, it can be the X expectation value or the square root of S in a scattering process. Perturbation theory, we can trust at the UV regime, at the infrared, perturbation theory breaks down, and as we shall see, supergravity will become relevant at the infrared. On the supergravity side, we have this solution due to Strominger and Horowitz, which is characterized by this harmonic function. One can calculate, of course, the curvature of this solution. The result is drawn here in the red line. We see that, as expected, at the flat regime, indeed, the curvature is 0 here, but also when we go to the substring regime, the curvature becomes very small, and the dilaton on the other end blows up at that regime. So there is an intermediate regime which is characterized by these two blue lines, in which both the curvature and the dilaton are small, so we can trust this solution. What we would really like to do is to consider this solution at the field theory limit. Namely, we want to keep the field theory energy fixed, R over alpha prime as before, which means that R over LS, the string scale, should go to 0. But we also want to keep the Yang-Mirs coupling constant fixed, which is given here, which means that GS, the string coupling constant at infinity, should vanish. This is why we believe that this that in this limit the theory will decouple from the bulk. Okay, in this field theory, limit, we end up with this solution, which has this properties. Again, we have alpha prime in front of the metric, and again, the time it takes for a light to propagate all the way to the boundary is finite, and the centrifugal barrier again blows up at infinity. And on top of this, we see that the effective string coupling in this field theory limit is finite, although the string coupling at infinity vanishes. And as we shall see, this this effective string coupling will play an important role in our understanding of the correspondence in these non-conformal cases. One can actually calculate the curvature associated with this solution to end up with this nice result. We find that the curvature in string units is nothing but 1 over G effective, where G effective is the effective coupling constant of the field theory. So we have here a kind of we see that there is there are two descriptions which with no overlap. At the infrared, the G effective is very large, so we can trust the supergravity solution. There, we cannot trust the perturbation theory. On the other end, on the ultraviolet, the curvature in string units becomes very large. We cannot trust supergravity, and perturbation theory is valid there. Of course, we have to be more careful when we are talking about string theory solution, because to trust the solution, we need also the dilaton to be small, which means that G effective should be much smaller than this combination. So altogether, we end up with the conclusion that to learn something about field theory using this kind of approach, we must take the larger limit. So let me consider now a couple of examples. The D1 branch, the theory living on a collection of D1 branches, we all know that it's a 1 plus 1 super-Langmuir theory. At the UV, we can trust the perturbation theory. We have here this intermediate regime where both the curvature in string unit is small and the dilaton is small. In that regime, we can trust the supergravity solution associated with this with the solution of the D1 branches. As we go further to the infrared, the dilaton becomes large. So we must apply S-duality. S-duality takes the solution of a collection of n D1 branches to a solution of a collection of n fundamental strings. And the curvature of this solution is given here. And we see that there is a curvature singularity, as was pointed out by Sen some time ago. So since we have here in the supergravity picture, we see that there is a curvature singularity. It implies that in the field theory description, there should be a field theory description at the infrared. And indeed, we know that there is such a description. At the infrared, the Young-Mills in 1 plus 1 dimension flows in the infrared to the orbifold, the conformal field theory with the vertex, which was considered by Dijkstra and the Verlinders. And we know, furthermore, we know that this vertex description breaks down at scales of the order of G Young-Mills, which is exactly the point where supergravity takes over. So we end up with this nice picture that at the UV we have a perturbation theory of super-Young-Mills. At the infrared we have this conformal description which we can trust in perturbation theory namely, and the supergravity solution interpolates between these two solutions, between these two regimes. There are a couple of checks that one can do and to see that one can do. The first is in sense closely related to the correspondence principle of due to Horowitz and Polchinski. Namely, we can calculate at that regime the entropy. Here we have free theory. We can calculate the entropy. The entropy is simply we just need to count the number of the degrees of freedom, and we end up with this result. We can interpolate this result till the transition regime here, and there might be a numerical factor of order one, which cannot depend on n. So, at that regime, we can compare the result to the supergravity result, which is just the Hawking-Bekenstein area, just the Hawking-Bekenstein formula, which is simply this formula given here. And again, we can interpolate this formula from this regime where we can trust the supergravity solution to the regime, to the transition point. And again, there might be corrections of order one. So up to a numerical factor, there should be an agreement between these two results at the transition point. And indeed, one can easily check that this is the case by plugging Jiang mean times the square root of n instead of e here. The same goes for the relation between supergravity and the conformal field theory description. At the conformal field theory description here, what we have is we know that the main contribution to the entropy comes from one long string which wraps n times. This was shown by Maldacena and Susskind. And again, we can interpolate this result to the transition point here, and again there is a match with the supergravity result interpolated to this regime. One can also consider the Wilson line in this non-conformal case, as was done by Maldacena. In the super-Young-Mills side, we have this perturbative result. The supergravity side, we have this string which goes like this. And unlike the conformal case here, the calculation is a little bit more subtle because the string must cross a regime where we have high curvature, and in that regime we cannot trust the contribution which comes from that regime. However, one can easily see that the main contribution comes from this part, from the low curvature regime, where we can trust the supergravity solution as long as indeed the minimal point is somewhere here, and we end up with the following result, which again matches the perturbative result at the transition point origin. One can also consider, of course, the theory living on D2 branches. This theory is super-Young-Mills in 2 plus 1 dimensions. I won't go through all the details. Again, we have your super-Young-Mills perturbation theory in super-Young-Mills at DUV. At the infrared, we have the conformal description, which is dual at the larger limit to RDS 4 cross S7. And supergravity interpolates between these two descriptions. The nice thing about this is to see that the supergravity knows that here we have that here the theory has R symmetry SO7, while here the R symmetry is SO8, and indeed the solution interpolates between these two descriptions. One can of course consider also the D0 case, and in particular, we end up with the metric because that was considered by Emil before, but I won't do it here. Instead, let me consider now the n equal 4 theory, but at finer temperature. This was done also by Ray, Tyson, and D. The underlying theory is, of course, a conformal one, but the temperature introduces a scale to the system, so we can study the theory below and above this scale. In particular, we can calculate the Wilson line using the supergravity approach. We have to be careful here because we have a curvature singularity. Unlike in the extremal case, we have a curvature singularity when u equals zero. But this singularity is behind an event horizon, so as long as we stay outside the horizon, we can trust the calculation that we are doing. And essentially, what we would like to do is just to generalize the well-known Wilson line calculation. But here, in general, we have two options. One option is, we wanted the boundary to have a quark and an iter quark, so there are two ways to get this. One way is to have a string which connects these two, the quark and the iter quark. In this case, there is a force between them. On the other hand, we can have one string which goes like this, and the other one with different orientation, and in that case, there is no, they are not connected, so there is no force between the quark and the iter quark. In the t equals zero case, this configuration has less energy, so we should always consider this one. On the other hand, when we consider the finite temperature case, we see that as long as we have distances which are much smaller than the temporal wavelengths, then we should consider this configuration, and we end up with this behavior here, which is basically the conformal behavior plus corrections. But when we go to the but when we consider distances which are much larger than 1/T, then we should consider this configuration, which now has less energy, and we end up with this no force behavior. There is something which is a little bit puzzling here, and the fact that here there is a sharp transition between these two descriptions, and basically we believe that this is because of we neglect in this description the black hole horizon fluctuation, which should smear this sharp transition here. Okay, near extremal D3 branch can also be used to study young Mills in three dimensions, as was suggested by Witten. In the Euclidean picture, what is happening is that once we introduce time, once we introduce temperature, we have periodicity in time, and as long as we are looking at distances which are much larger than this periodicity, then we are in a three-dimensional theory. Moreover, we are in a non-supersymmetric theory because of the temperature which induces a mass to the fermions and to the scalars. So one might hope that to actually be able to describe young Mills in three dimensions using near extremal D3 branch, and also to describe young Mills in four dimensions using near extremal D4 branch. But immediately we see that there is a problem, as was also noted by Witten. But let me, the way I understand this problem is as follows. Well, at the UV, we certainly, at the UV, the young Mills theory is asymptotically free, and from the supergravity point of view, This should be reflected by a curvature singularity, as we saw in the examples that we considered before. However, one can actually calculate the curvature associated with this solution of near extremal D3 brain and the solution of near extremal D4 brains, and we don't see this kind of behaviors, which are expected from the field theory point of view. Another way to stress this problem is to consider the special Wilson line. We expect to obtain a confinement, so we can repeat what we've done before, but now along the special direction. And indeed, we end up with a very complicated relation between the energy and the distance between the quark and the anti-quark. But what is happening is that when we are going to this infrared limit, we end up with this very simple area law. But the tension of the string, the QCD string, is too high. Namely, if we want to trust the supergravity solution, we need this quantity to be much larger than one. So the string can actually probe the Kaluza-Klein direction, so the theory all the time knows about its four-dimensional origin, even if we take the large T limit. But still, there are some qualitative and also quantitative results which one can obtain using this this correspondence also for the non-supersymmetric case. So it seems that we might be able to learn more about this about Young-Mills using these near extremal solutions, especially if we can somehow learn how to control the alpha prime corrections. Or maybe we can even learn about alpha prime correction using a field theory in this singular regime. Thank you.
The questions? Yes. The question was, is it generic in realizations of QCD that you get curvature singularities?
I think that... Okay, let me... what I was trying to say is that as long as you use this approach to consider a QCD, you must... To actually obtain a four-dimensional theory, you must consider a singular solution. And then all the alpha prime corrections will modify it in a way that you at least now cannot imagine precisely how it goes. Of course, one can try to do it in another approach, namely to consider a Hanani-Witten-like configuration to try to find a supergravity solution associated with this configuration. I have no idea how to do this, and as far as I know, nobody else knows precisely how to do it. But then it might work. So in any event, since the theory is asymptotically free, when you take u to infinity, you should end up with a curvature singularity, which should be logarithmic, unlike the case which I considered.
There are other questions? If not, let's thank the speaker again.